You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here. Celeste Headlee is taking a sniffly flu season day off this morning. We'll see her tomorrow. Sunday gave us all a 60-vote majority in the Senate. The procedural vote on the health care reform bill, it passed. The filibuster-proof majority that the Democrats have in the Senate is solid for now, but for how long? The real hard debating begins on the floor of the U.S. Senate starting next week, and front and center will be this issue.
Every other major industrialized nation but the United States has a budget for how much taxpayer funds are allocated to health care, because they've all recognized that you could bankrupt your country without it.
So you're talking about rationing.
Listen, we ration now. We just don't ration rationally.
That's David Walker, former head of the Government Accountability Office, speaking with Steve Croft on 60 Minutes last night in a story that's all about the distorted allocations of taxpayer money in health care as we currently do health care in the United States. Could that change? All agree that whatever version of the health care reform bill that emerges from the Congress, possibly by the end of the year, won't have succeeded unless it contains mechanisms to reduce somehow spiraling health care costs. At the very least, reform has to include a new way for patients and doctors to discuss health care options and to evaluate their care. And we saw just as recently as last week how difficult this is. New recommendations on breast cancer and cervical cancer screenings that could produce exactly a cost-saving result produced all kinds of anxiety and concern among doctors, among patients. How difficult is this all going to be? Well, joining us now is Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Good morning, Art.
Hey, John, how are you?
And Dr. Stacy Berg, pediatric oncologist at Texas Children's Hospital, also joins us. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, Arthur, generally speaking, we don't have much of a tradition in the United States of having serious discussions, doctor-patient or hospital to community or government to taxpayers, as to how we allocate funds for health care, correct?
I think that's true. I think we have a tradition of burying the cost of things. When your employer supplies insurance to you, you don't see very much in the way of what it's costing really to buy your insurance, if you will. When it's a bedside, it's fair to say that people have no idea how to read a hospital bill. They don't want to look at them. We try as hard as we can to disguise the fact that healthcare costs us money.
So we saw last week with the new recommendations on screenings for mammograms and prostate pap smears, that people feel good when they're tested. People feel good getting tested more, even if it's not scientifically recommended. Do you think this tension between science and a kind of feel-good sense of being checked out is also at work in the healthcare debate in Congress?
I do. I think that America has a culture of more is better. And in the face of disease, doing something is better than doing nothing. And that extends, obviously, into the realm of prevention. So we like to feel that there are things we can do to take charge of cancer and be on top of preventing it and controlling what's going on. And it even appeals to our sense of personal responsibility. Very important that we feel like we're doing the right thing in healthcare. We've been told to take charge and try to do what's necessary to control our health. So these are all things that don't square up when the data says, you know, screening under 50 for breast cancer, that just may not be the best way to spend money.
All right. Arthur Kaplan is director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Stacy Berg, in many ways, changing our frequency of pap screenings and breast cancer mammograms in many ways is the low-hanging fruit. It's the easy cost savings. What are the harder kind of single, maybe end of life or difficult, maybe oncological questions that you deal with every day?
Well, one of the things I'd like to say is that I'm not sure that the point behind changing the recommendations for screening for breast cancer with mammograms, for example, is about cost savings. It's about the risks and benefits. And although cost may also be a part of the conversation whenever we talk about the appropriate way to apply a test, I think in this particular case, cost was not a major part of the conversation. The real conversation was for patients or for women who are getting mammograms, do getting mammograms when you're under 50 give you benefits compared with the things that happen that are risky or that are undesirable outcomes?
You know, you make a really important point. Let's focus on that nuance for a second. I think a lot of Americans, when they hear people making this cost-benefit analysis, this scientific inquiry into whether this test is worthwhile, they hear something different going on. They hear it's too expensive. The rich people are going to get this test, but I'm not. How do we change that?
Well, I think we did hear that certainly on television in the days after the recommendations were released, and we heard it in the newspaper, and I think we heard it from some of our advocacy groups and our colleagues. I think the way we need to change it is, first of all, as Art mentioned, by having a rational dialogue become part of our psyche when it comes to health care. Everyone knows that it costs money. No one knows how much it costs, and no one knows really how much it costs me as an individual. It's very hard to understand that about your own health care. And when it comes to difficult things like figuring out exactly how much benefit there is of a screening procedure or how much benefit there is of a surgical procedure or, say, of a new anti-cancer drug, I think that we have to start with an honest dialogue and a willingness to try to understand some of the difficult concepts of statistics and odds, and then we can try to figure out how do those apply to me as a doctor speaking to a patient? How do those apply to me as a woman trying to decide whether to get a mammogram when I turn 40, these sorts of things.
But Dr. Berg, you know, and I don't want to push you necessarily in this direction, but as a pediatric oncologist, these kinds of discussions couldn't be more difficult, I would think.
No, these kinds of discussions are always very difficult, and we relatively seldom make any decisions in pediatric oncology based on cost. But we talk all the time about what are the risks to your child, what are the benefits to your child. And one of the reasons that these conversations are so difficult is that if we knew exactly what would happen to any individual, then we would be able to say very clearly, here's what you should do. The difficulty is when we look at a broad population and we say, all right, for 2,000 people, here's what will happen to most of them, and then try to make a decision for one person based on that.
Oh, that's a perfect, you know, a probability is a probability, but one life is one life, that's
exactly.
For sure. Dr. Stacy Berg, pediatric oncologist at Texas Children's Hospital. Very quickly, Art Kaplan, do you see anything in this healthcare bill that will help Americans get into these kinds of discussions in a responsible way?
Ironically, I do, because I think if we're all in the same boat, if we extend coverage out to everyone, then we all have a stake in trying to figure out, well, really, what is this going to cost us as we begin, in a sense, to have to work on this together?
There's
keeping
the
quarter of the population out is rationing in the worst way.
There's the takeaway, getting more stakeholders in the entire debate. Arthur Kaplan, director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, talking about healthcare reform. It passed in the Senate. Where does it go from here?